Welcome to another Facebook Live interview. I'm Don Burgess, and today I have the privilege of sitting with His Excellency the Governor, Mr. John Rankin. How are you today, sir?
Fine, thank you.
So normally I do something where I ask something a little lighter question, and sometimes I do it at the end. Today I'm doing it at the beginning, just to make you seem a little more personable to the people. What sort of hobbies do you have while you're here in Bermuda? How do you relax?
Well, it's a great privilege for me to be governor, and it's a busy job to which I'm very committed. But of course, it's important to have some downtime as well. So when I get the opportunity, I like to try to keep fit. So I play some tennis on the island when I can and go to the gym. I like to walk. It's such a beautiful place to be living and working in. And I like to watch sport as well. So I like to follow football here. And of course, the best thing is when my family visit. I've got two daughters and a son, all in their 20s. They've all been to visit, and having some downtime with them is very important for me.
Which of the local football teams do you follow?
Well, North Village are my local team here in Pembroke, but I've got an affinity with Crossroads. When they got promotion last year, they came and celebrated here through Government House Gardens, so I've been up to watch them at Garrison Field a couple of times. So they're my team, and I'm looking forward to the coming season.
Moving into the harder stuff now, a lot of Bermudians have been following Brexit. It seems like it's taken a lot longer than, you know, maybe people had anticipated. What do you feel like are the ramifications that are going to happen for Bermuda?
Well, of course, the precise details of the Brexit outcome are yet to be known. The negotiation is taking place. There are challenges, there'll be opportunities from Brexit. But I think the direct impact and implications for Bermuda will be relatively limited. Bermuda is not a recipient of funding from the European Union, and doesn't export physical goods to the European Union. I think the most important thing for Bermuda is for business here, and in particular for the reinsurance industry. The reinsurance industry here has what's called solvency to equivalence with the EU, which means that reinsurance contracts written here meet EU regulations and are automatically accepted within the EU. And the important point is that solvency to equivalence exists independently of UK membership of the European Union, and so should continue after March of next year. The UK is committed to supporting the overseas territories as part of the Brexit process, but my belief is that the immediate impact for Bermuda shouldn't be great, and as I say, there will be opportunities as well as challenges from the process.
It seemed like from some of the reading material that the EU's taken a little harder line against the overseas territories. Bermuda's for the most part largely unscathed because our higher regulatory standards. But do you see that sort of, maybe antagonistic might be a little bit strong of a word, but do you see that sort of a stance from the EU trying to bring the UK's territory, overseas territories into line?
Well, I think that what's important for Bermuda is that this jurisdiction continues to meet the highest international regulatory standards. That's what our reputation is built on. The Bermuda Monetary Authority, which meets the highest regulatory standards, and of course a legal system which has the respect of other jurisdictions and other businesses. So we live in a changing international landscape of which the European Union is part. It's in Bermuda's interest to continue to maintain its reputation as meeting those excellent standards and making sure that we are protected from those who would wish to unfairly criticise this jurisdiction or the debate on the sanctions and anti-money laundering bill to require overseas territories to introduce public beneficial ownership registers. That amendment was not supported by the UK government. Mm-hmm. And indeed, Lord Ahmad, who's a minister responsible for the overseas territories in the British government, made clear in the debate in the House of Lords that he was not in favour of legislating for the overseas territories in this area without their agreement. The arithmetic in Parliament went the other way, and so the amendment was passed. Now, I recognise the concerns in that area, and I too would have much preferred anything in this area to have been agreed on a consensual basis. And I recognise the concerns that Bermuda and other jurisdictions have expressed that this legislation creates an unlevel playing field for Bermuda compared to other jurisdictions. But we've got time, I hope, to sort out the issue. The legislation hasn't imposed beneficial ownership registers at this point, but rather looks to a deadline for the end of 2020 for overseas territories themselves to be able to legislate in this area. The British Prime Minister, Theresa May, has made clear in her discussions with the premiers of all the overseas territories that she wants to find a consensual way forward on this issue. So we've got to now try to sort out that issue to make sure that we can operate in an agreed fashion.
Well, I think like the Premier's statement when this was being discussed was saying, you know, we, Bermuda, any organization that's a legitimate organization that wants to know information, Bermuda does work with them and gives that sort of information. What's wrong with continuing with that model?
Well, certainly we've got a well-established beneficial ownership register in Bermuda, and those who need access to it, for example, through law enforcement agencies, if there are concerns about misuse of funds, can have access to the register here. So as I say, the British government's position was not to enforce public beneficial ownership registers, and that remains the British government's position. But the UK Parliament and the UK system has adopted an amendment in this area, and so what we now need to do is find a way forward to meet those requirements which don't produce unfair harm on this jurisdiction.
So take us through the UK's role in legislating for Bermuda and the overseas territories. What does that look like? How do they consult you, or do they consult you first, or what's the process?
Sure. Under the Bermuda's constitution, the 1968 constitution, Bermuda is in fact the most self-governing of any of the overseas territories, and so most issues are devolved. And my job as governor in areas which fall within the responsibility of the Bermuda government is to assent to what has been passed by the Bermuda legislature. But I do have some areas of specific responsibility. First of all, it's my responsibility to check that bills are compliant with Bermuda's international obligations and check that bills are consistent with and not repugnant to the Constitution. There are also, if bills relate to my specific areas of responsibility, for defence and security of external affairs, then they require consultation with the Secretary of State in the UK before I assent to them. But for the most part, as I say, Bermuda is self-governing. My assent to bills is automatic, but there are some bills falling in those particular areas which require me to get engaged as governor on the substance of the bill and consultation with the Secretary of State in the UK as necessary.
So, for example, like the same-sex marriage and the civil union, that would be something that they would have consulted with you about before you gave your assent?
That's right. The same-sex marriage bill raised issues which I had to carefully consider. First of all, in the compliance with Bermuda's international obligations. The European Court of Human Rights has to date not ruled that states are required to introduce same-sex marriage per se. They have required that legal recognition be given to same-sex partners, but I examined that issue very closely before I assented to the domestic partnership bill, which was passed by the legislature. On the constitutional issue there, let me not go into detail on that question, because of course that is currently the subject of legal challenge within the courts here, and will go to the Court of Appeal in Bermuda this November. So it wouldn't be proper for me to comment on the detail of that matter, which is now sub judice. But let me say that I hope at the end of the legal proceedings and at the end of the debate on this matter, whatever the outcome is, I hope that we'll end up in a position where there is respect for different views on this matter and respect for individual rights on this matter.
Did you find it too contentious? Or in your opinion, the debate back and forth?
There's been a contentious debate on this issue, and I know that feelings have run high. As governor, my job is to look at the legislation in terms of my responsibilities under the Constitution, But I say my hope is, and I hope everybody's hope is, that at the end of this debate we will end up in a position whereby there is understanding of people's different perspectives and respect for people's different lives.
Right. Now, I understand that, you know, in your consultations, the UK government felt like this would, the domestic partnership bill would meet the UK human, or sorry, the EU human rights amendments and wouldn't run afoul of that?
Well, the UK government position is very clear. Mm-hmm. The UK government is a long-standing and strong advocate for LGBT rights. Mm-hmm. And the UK government is supportive of same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. But of course, we also recognise the largely self-governing nature of Bermuda. We recognise the legislation that's been passed in the Bermuda Parliament here. And so the test that I had to apply on very careful consideration was again the compatibility of the legislation with Bermuda's international obligations, particularly under the Council of Europe's European Convention on Human Rights and with the Constitution.
Personally, what's your opinion on same-sex marriage?
My position as governor is to consider my responsibilities as governor. But as I say, I hope that there can be respect for individual opinions and individual rights in this area.
Another issue that recently cropped up was the Uyghurs were granted British Overseas Territory citizenship. When did that process start? And was it somebody from the UK, somebody in Bermuda that started that process?
Well, of course, the Uyghurs' arrival on this territory was a difficult process because the then Premier of the day brought these gentlemen here without the agreement or consultation with the British government and a breach of the British government's responsibilities for external affairs. So I think that there were problems caused by the time of their arrival. As regards questions of applications for British Overseas Territory citizen status, it's not my policy to go into individual cases in that area, and I'm not going to do so in this interview. But what I can say is that any applications for naturalisation which leads to BOTC status are judged against set criteria. Mm-hmm. That status can be gained by descent, by marriage, by being on the island free from immigration time restrictions, and any applications by these gentlemen will have been considered against those set criteria in the same way as any other.
As a human rights issue, because without any citizenship papers, they were pretty much stuck here. Now this will allow them to travel to all the territories?
That's right. BOTC status resolves the issue as regards having passports for these individuals. But I say the problems that were created in the first place were not created by the governor of the day or by the British government.
You're also in charge of the regiment. At least to me, one of the interesting things is the new sort of Coast Guard boat patrol that's going to come into place next year. How do you feel like this is going to enhance the regiment's role?
Well, I'm very proud of the Royal Bermuda Regiment and of the young men and women who volunteer for service within it. They play an essential role on this island, particularly at this time of hurricane season. We're all prepared. We have to be prepared for the potential risk to this island. And the regiment play a vital part in hurricane preparation and response. They're the first service on the ground after the hurricane, helping to clear the roads to allow the ambulance services and the fire services and others to be able to help to meet the island's needs in those circumstances. And at this time of year, I also remember, of course, the role the regiment played last year in response to hurricanes Irma and Maria, which hit our neighbouring Caribbean overseas territories to the south, and the Royal Bermuda Regiment went to the Turks and Caicos Islands and provided much needed immediate assistance there, and the Bermuda Police Service deployed to British Virgin Islands to similarly assist. So I'm very proud of the work of the regiment. And looking forward, I wish, as I know the Minister for National Security wishes, a regiment which can continue to be professional and meet the needs of the island in disaster response, in terms of support for the civilian power when we have big events on the island, like the America's Cup last year, the triathlon this year, and of course the new role that's envisaged for the regiment to carry out a maritime security role in a Coast Guard function, taking over responsibilities from the police in that area, which will allow the police to, who are stretched in terms of the demands on their time, to focus on their primary areas. And at the moment, we have a handover system whereby the regiment are working with the police on the water, so in due course that they can take over those full Coast Guard responsibilities.
So what does that process look like with, since you have to deal with both police and the regiment, that them working together, what's happening with that?
Well, physically, they are working together. So we have members of the regiment on the water, on the boats with the police, learning from them, sharing best practice with them and understanding the legislative framework in which they operate. So this isn't something that's going to happen, you know, flash bang overnight. It's going to be a learning process and a gradual process, and then the regiment will take over that responsibility. But I've seen it myself on the water during cup match. We had regiment cup match weekend, the regiment serving with the police on the water. So that learning process will continue to operate. Both the commanding officer of the regiment and the police commissioner are committed to a successful handover process.
Along with that, is there going to be a need for additional, maybe bigger boats to perform this role?
It's a big responsibility, maritime responsibility, and so if we can find the necessary resources to continue to improve what can be done in the water, then I'll support that. It needs to be done within budgets, I understand that, as do the police and the regiment.
Talking about the police, we've had a few problems getting the legislation through or a notice in the paper through for checkpoints. What went wrong? Why wasn't it gazetted properly?
There's been an administrative problem with the wording of the gazette, and it's important to get that right because in the event that there are people caught with too much alcohol and charged, we need to make sure we have the proper process in place so it can go through the courts successfully. So it's been a bit frustrating, but I think we now want to get that show on the road. And of course, the objective here is not to convict people. The objective is to change the culture so that people don't drink too much alcohol and get into their cars. There have been too many deaths of young people and older people on this island from road accidents, many of them involving alcohol. And so I very much hope that the introduction of roadside breathalyzer testing together with the other existing powers of the police can help in changing that culture and help to save lives on the island.
Does that tie in with the fact that you're announcing when it eventually gets done properly, you know, okay, we're doing a checkpoint here, we're doing a checkpoint here, be aware we're going to be checking?
That's right, because I say the purpose is that people will be aware that the police will be out there carrying out checkings, and so hopefully it will make people think again. Hopefully if people are out in the group, they'll have a designated driver who won't be drinking alcohol that evening, or they'll get a taxi home or find some other way of not getting into a car under the influence. And as I say, that will save lives on the island.
Now, I'm not completely sure, but are the police going to be wearing the body cameras those nights?
I believe so. The body cams are going to be a standard part of that procedure.
Now, have you seen that process in work, and what do you think about it?
I think the body cams help. They help from an evidentiary point of view. They help to show what has happened. I know the police commissioner is committed to the use of body cams in this area. I think that it will give people, you know, confidence in what is happening, and it will help when people unfortunately do fall foul of the law to make sure that it's been a secure process which can lead to a proper court process thereafter.
The new police commissioner's barely been here a month. How would you say things are going for him at this point?
I've been working very closely with the new police commissioner, as I worked with his predecessor, in discussing the strategic challenges that the police face. And I work also in conjunction, of course, with the Minister for National Security. The police commissioner is very committed to having a first-class police service. I'm very committed to having a community policing model, working with the community in helping to ensure confidence with the police and helping to tackle some of the challenges on the island. other than the road traffic fatalities, which we just talked about, of course, I'm keenly aware of the challenges from gangs and from drugs. Again, too many young people, young men in particular, losing their lives, and we need to find a constructive way, both a policing response and a community response involving Operation Street Safe, involving church leaders, involving pastors, to try to address both the immediate issues and the underlying issues which have led to that problem of gangs and drugs on the island.
You're talking about gangs, I remember covering a court case earlier this year where police had the CCTV footage of a worker from one of the ships just walking through the security shed at the docks, bringing the drugs off with him and the guns off with him. How can we tighten the security as they leave that area?
Yeah, we need to make sure we have proper customs and procedures in place to try to prevent drugs being brought illegally onto the island. We need to have effective intelligence in this area. We need to have effective police prevention measures in this area. But we also need to work in a bottom-up fashion. We need to work through education. We need to work through community programs for the young people who might fall into a drugs way of life and be caught up in gang culture. So there's no single answer to dealing with this problem. Part of the response is security response and effective policing, but it also involves a wider community response as well. It involves parents, it involves families. You know, I've had young children myself. I know that it's constant work to try to help them in the right way of life, and so we all need to work in that area. And as governor, I want to support the community organisations working in this field who are trying to help young people into become successful adults. Young people are the future of Bermuda, and so it's in everyone's interest to try to guard against this negative pervasive culture which a small number of young people get caught up in, but which can be so damaging.
I don't want to seem like I'm hammering this point, but wouldn't it make sense, like at the docks, they should have to go through an x-ray machine, and any bags they take off have to be x-rayed as well?
Certainly, I think it's important we have effective security arrangements both at the airport and at the docks to try to make sure we don't have illegal substances coming onto the country. The operational details of that, I'm not going to get into the details of that, but I agree with your thesis, which is that we need to have effective security arrangements in place on the island.
There were some pushback or people were upset when we had to bring in an overseas police commissioner. They were upset that, you know, no Bermudian was put into place to be trained to take over that role when the last police commissioner retired. How can we go ahead and correct that process for the next time?
Yeah. Well, the appointment of the police commissioner lies with me under the Constitution after consultation with the Premier and the Leader of the Opposition as necessary. The job was advertised through a transparent process, through a competitive process, and an independent panel was set up to interview and make recommendations to me. And on this occasion, the view was taken, the recommendation with which I agreed, that the best qualified person for the job on this occasion was a police officer, a very experienced police officer from the United Kingdom. But I will also, both with the police and in any other organisation, hope that there will be Bermudians coming up through the system and trained through the system to be able to take over top leadership positions. And I know that the new police commissioner is committed to doing that within the Bermuda Police Service. So I certainly will always want to find well-qualified Bermudians. On this occasion, I took the decision that the best qualified person for the leadership role was a British police officer. But I hope that future governors, through encouragement within the BPS and other organisations, will know that there are young, talented Bermudians who can move up into leadership positions in the future.
I think some people may be able to buy that maybe the best qualified person was from overseas, but I think a lot of them would say, like, okay, we want to have a Bermudian as police commissioner, so why isn't there a program set up in advance? Okay, we're going to make sure that you're qualified, or you're going to be the best qualified person to take over that role.
Well, there are, of course, existing development training programs within the Bermuda Police Service, but if you say to me that we need to redouble our efforts in that area and redouble the efforts to get people up to the the experience that they require to take over police commissioner, then yes, I will support redoubling of efforts in that area, and I know the new police commissioner will as well.
There was a little bit of controversy over Cup Match, whether or not you should hand out the cup. When that first cropped its head, did it surprise you?
I've learned not to get too surprised by some things which happen in this jurisdiction, and I learned from them. But my response at the time was to say this was a matter for the clubs involved, mm-hmm. and that if Somerset and St George's, Somerset hosting on this occasion, wished to invite me to present the cup, then I would feel very privileged to do so. I was duly invited, and I recognise the importance of Cup Match and the historical events it marks, emancipation. It's an immensely important issue to mark. So I was privileged to be invited, and I hope I presented the cup in a respectful fashion. I was grateful to be a part of the day.
After it raised its head in the Somerset, still Mr. Blanchett continued to, he asked you to take part. Were you surprised? Well, you just said that nothing surprises you, but were you pleased that he in face of the adversity, that he decided that was part of the Cup Match tradition?
It was a decision for the club, and it certainly was not for me to persuade or pressurize. Mm-hmm. It was a matter for the club. I was grateful to be invited and was pleased to accept the invitation.
Your team didn't win.
And the governor is neutral when it comes to Cup Match, so I've learned that much, that it's vital that the governor is a supporter of neither St. George's or Somerset. I enjoy a good sporting occasion.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time here today. I'm Don Burgess. I'm here for Burr News with Facebook Live and with the governor, Mr. John Rankin. I appreciate your time today, and I hope you have a blessed rest of your week.
Thank you, Don, I'm grateful to have the opportunity to take part in this interview, and I wish you and all the press on the island best of luck in your future endeavors.
For Burr News, I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.